We've got Irma here, right?
Yes, Chair. I see the acting CEO is already here with his delegation.
All right. So welcome, everybody, and particularly the delegation from Irma. As you know, we have sought exemption. We can't, for those who may have any queries, we can't have a meeting unless the committee sections agreed to it. And if we are meeting while the House is, it obviously means that Nkululeko has secured the exemption from the sitting of the House. I have raised that it's quite disruptive to have sittings in the mornings of the plenary of the House, because obviously we can meet from 2 o'clock up to, well, 10 p.m. if we have to. But in the mornings ideally should be left for committee meetings, but we are where we are and the matter is being reviewed. So welcome everybody. I'm handing over now to Irma. You have the agenda before you. This arises from a request from committee members across all political parties in our committee that given the bill we were processing at the time, and simultaneously there were ructions within Irma, including about its then CEO. It was in the media and elsewhere. And, you know, secondly, we were concerned about giving them more powers, which is what they wanted, and do they have the capacity to implement it. The Irma plays a fundamentally important role in our society now more than ever before, given the number and range and scope of corporate misdemeanors, to put it mildly, and in particular, that auditors are either turning a blind eye or are complicit in the wrongdoing, as we know in several cases. So not just here, but globally, and there has been a tightening of regulations and introduction of new legislation and so on to deal with this matter globally, and we too are doing it in our country. It's long overdue, and we were convinced as a committee, the Standing Committee on Finance at the time, that the penalties or sanctions that were applied to horrendous wrongdoing, whose consequences have been devastating for a lot of people, particularly disproportionately, as usual, the poor and disadvantaged, that they got away with very light penalties. The law and the regulations didn't allow Irma to do more. But now, at least a bit more can be done, even if not enough. But we need to know that Irma is up and running to play its more effective and decisive role. Thank you. Okay, over to the team. Will somebody introduce the team? Is there anybody from the board here?
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair. No, there's nobody from the board. It is just the executive team, the directors attending today.
Can I ask why nobody from the board is here? Because we discussed this about 3 years ago when we were on the Standing Committee side. We were now in the Select Committee. And we agreed that actually it's the board that accounts to Parliament. The chair of the board or the deputy chair, or if both are unavailable, it's the other members of the board, the non-executive members, who are answerable in terms of the PFMA. Can you explain why nobody is here from the board?
So, Chair, what the current status is in terms of our board is that the minister has obviously dissolved the previous board and in February appointed a caretaker board. Those caretakers' tenure came to an end at the end of April. So currently, we are awaiting the minister to announce a new board. That's the current situation, Chair.
Okay. All right. Is there anybody from National Treasury here?
Yes, Chair. I saw Cindy coming in. I'm not too sure if he's with
the team. All right. We need to write a letter to the minister to find out what the delay is. See, I wasn't aware that the board tenure, the caretaker board, as it's called, which was announced in the media, actually has had its term come to an end and the term hasn't been renewed. And it's end of April. So I think we need to follow up with a letter and ask the minister what's going on and when they're going to appoint extend the term of the caretaker board or actually appoint a permanent board. And Kululeko, just to remind you, if a board of an organization does not appear, a representative of the board, preferably the chair, and if they have a deputy, it's deputy, but they must give us legitimate reasons why they can't be, they can't, then it has to be a board member. Only in exceptional circumstances will we allow for board members not to be present. This matter has been dealt with in the last term of Parliament. And if I'm correct, we even got the lawyer, Frank Jenkins, intervening, but maybe not. I can't recall, to say yes, it's the board that's accountable to the parliamentary committee. So, okay, in your circumstances, we understand. Go for it. Thank you. I would suggest you do 45 minutes or so, covering the issues that Nkululeko on my behalf and the committee's behalf has sent to you. Maximum an hour, but preferably 45 minutes, and then we'll open up to questions. Thank you indeed. Over to you, sir. Please introduce yourself and your team, and then let's get going.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check if somebody will present our presentation, or should we share the screen?
Well, that's a matter between you and the secretary. What do you say, Kululeko?
I don't have a problem, Chair. I can share the screen on my side.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. But get going in the meanwhile.
Thank you. So good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and everybody in attendance. Thank you for the opportunity to present and update you on the RBA. My name is Imran Nagy. I'm currently the acting CEO of the RBA since the middle of February. I'm joined by my colleagues and directors. Sorry, Chair, I just need to... adjust my screen here. So I'm joined by my colleagues and directors, Natasha Naika, Nadine Cater, Gillian Bailey, Rebecca Motsepe, and Nklambi Gulwa. The next slide, please. So our presentation will cover, Chair, the three agenda areas as per your invitation. Firstly, the implications of changes in the RBA over the past 6 months. Secondly, the implementation of the Auditing Profession Act amendments. And thirdly, the quarterly reporting feedback. So let's start off the next slide as the first agenda item, which covers implications and changes over the past 6 months. Yes, next slide, please. So, Chair, the beginning of 2021 has seen significant leadership changes at the RBA, with the Minister of Finance dissolving the board, appointing a caretaker board, who in turn appointed an acting CEO following the former CEO's resignation after 7 months. All these changes happened in the month of February. These changes have largely been met with positive support from management and staff, but we've really had to show tremendous resilience during a turbulent year in which we also had to navigate unprecedented COVID-19 disruptions. But with the full support of the executive management team and the staff, we've committed ourselves to look forward and to continue to execute the RBA's mandate unabatedly and to implement our new refocused strategy. Next slide, please. So, Chair, the Minister's appointment of the caretaker board has resulted in decisive action on a number of key issues. For instance, while many delays had accumulated at the board subcommittee level, the caretakers have resolved much of this backlog in a short space of time by making themselves available during their 3-month tenure. And, Chair, just to to your earlier point that the Act prohibits the minister from extending the caretaker board's tenure beyond 3 months. And I'll give some feedback as to what we know how far the process is. But as one of their first priority items, the caretakers met with us as a management team to review our five-year strategy. And a new refocused strategy was developed and submitted to National Treasury in February, and our updated annual performance plan for the 2022 financial year was tabled in Parliament in March. Our refocused five-year strategy is aimed at restoring confidence, both in the regulator and in the auditing profession, with three key focus areas. Firstly, to ensure the sustainability and relevance of the profession and the regulator. Secondly, to enhance audit quality. And thirdly, to drive broader reforms through comprehensive stakeholder engagement. And I'll give you a little bit more around that just now. In March, we have launched a robust Restoring Confidence 2.0 project. That's the name of our new project. This is a project that's now strategy and budget backed, and which has been communicated to most of our key stakeholders in the last 2 months, and it is well received and supported. We will also capitalize on our previous Restoring Confidence projects, out of which a lot of very good enhancements came about. For example, one of them is the APA amendments process that we started about 3 years ago. In line with our new Restoring Confidence 2.0 strategy, we established three focus groups led by our directors, executive directors, focusing on the following three areas. Firstly, the financial reporting and governance ecosystem. Chair, this is not necessarily within our mandate and requires broader stakeholder outreach, but we recognize the need for us to also look beyond the fence in terms of beyond our mandate. And one of the areas that you should be aware of is that of comprehensive regulation, whereby we really need the accountants and accounting bodies in the country to also be regulated. Secondly, a second focus group is on the auditing profession and reforms that are currently looked into that falls within our mandate. And thirdly, the third focus group looking at the RBA itself, our internal processes and platforms and people to make sure that we are fit for purpose regulator for the future. According to the caretaker board's feedback to management, the caretakers together with the ministerial representative have concluded the nomination process of a new board and new board members as instructed by the Minister of Finance. And after following a robust interview and independent review process, a list of candidates was submitted to the minister in the third week of April. They have also taken decisions on 7 new investigation matters and have noted the imposition of sanctions on 36 matters that were decided by the previous disciplinary advisory committee. The caretakers have approved several submissions in the 3 months, including an entire new suite of international quality management standards to enhance audit quality by auditors. And they also approved our new fees for the 2022 financial year as required by our Act. Sorry, we're still on the same slide. We really appreciate the feedback that we received from the caretakers, and when they exited, Chair, they did say to us that contrary to the negative press about the RBA in the months, in the last months, they did not find an organization that is in disarray or in chaos, but they rather found an organization with a competent and experienced management team and staff that are committed to the work to protect the public. And they also commended us for submitting high quality documents to them to make it easy for them to take decisions. I just thought I'd share that because that was exact feedback that we received from them before they exited. Then lastly on this slide, on the 23rd of April, the President assented to the amendments to the APA Act, amendments which came into effect on the 26th of April following publication in the Government Gazette. As the audit regulator, we are obviously very pleased with the new Act amendments, and we appreciate the overwhelming support of the Minister, National Treasury and Parliament who fast-tracked the promulgation of the amended Act. So yes, maybe in the next slide, please. So that's quite a mouthful, but there are a number of implications on the RBA as a result of the most recent leadership changes. We are currently awaiting the appointment of the new board by the Minister of Finance, and the new board, once appointed, must then begin the process of appointing a new CEO. Until the new board is appointed and inducted, the implementation of the APA amendments will not be approved timeously so as to allow seamless implementation and flow of our mandated functions. Although a delay in appointing a new board has no immediate impact on our day-to-day operations, it will delay the work of our subcommittees, of the subcommittees to the board, such as our newly established enforcement committee, our operations committee, and our audit and risk management committee, and as well as all our other statutory committees that is necessary for the RBA to function effectively. So that's on the first item on the agenda, Chair. I'll move then on to the next item, the second item, which is an update on the implementation of our APA amendments. So as mentioned before, the APA amendments came into effect on the 26th of April. The amendments will not only bolster the IRBA's power to deliver more effectively on our mandate, but it will keep and equip us to better protect the investing public, such as pensioners, and holding errant auditors accountable and keeping auditors in check to continuously produce high quality audits. These amendments come at a critical time when IRBA is working very hard to restore confidence in itself and the profession, which is necessary to stimulate much needed investment that is important for our economic recovery. We are currently in the process of implementing the amendments, and the next two slides, if you can just move to the next slide, please. We did summarize our APA implementation project in two slides at a high level. Chair, we were told we have only 18 minutes, but thank you for extending more time to us for this presentation. So, Chair, I do take the presentation as read, but in the interest of time, I will highlight only some of the key deliverables. So firstly, we have identified a task team to develop a draft regulatory strategy for submission to the board and the minister by the end of July. Following the strict independence and experience requirements of the board and subcommittees per the new Act, processes have been put in place to ensure full compliance as soon as possible. The amendments also require significant changes to our board resolutions and delegations, and this is currently under review to ensure it can be tabled before the new board as soon as they are appointed. Obviously, without any delegations, the new Act amendments cannot be implemented, and that is subject to board approval. The amendments also impact on our new registration requirements and reportable irregularities, and we have communicated to registered auditors already, and we've already actioned the implementation of these two aspects. Next slide, please. So on this slide, we have projects in progress to address changes in our investigations and disciplinary matters, such as the referral of non-audit-related investigations to professional bodies, such as the SICA, and we have developed search and seizure and subpoena guidelines and amend our disciplinary rules. These are projects that are underway, Chair, to make sure the implementation is smooth. The new Act allows the Minister of Finance to set maximum fines, to your earlier point, on transgressions. This is the only item in the Act with a transitional provision. I believe to cater for a 30-day public comment period, but we do plan to present proposals to our board and to the minister in terms of the transitional timelines. We also have implementation plans for our POPI Act by the 1st of July, and we're making good progress in that regard. So as can be seen, this is really at a very high level, extracts from our plan, but as you can see, the implementation projects are in progress as we proactively prepare the necessary documents in anticipation of our new board for their approval. We recognize the need to expedite the implementation of the Act amendments through these projects in pursuit of full compliance as soon as possible. Chair, I'm then moving on to the third and last agenda item, which is an update on our last quarterly report, which ended in March, which also marked the end of our financial year. Sorry, next slide, please. Thank you. So, so in terms of PFMA compliance, this is just a snapshot of all our submissions. We do know that we submitted all our submissions on time. We did request extension for our strategy and annual performance plan until the end of February due to the change in the board and the CEO. But in spite of this, we still submitted our refocused strategy and annual performance plan in time for tabling in March. Next slide, please. So as for our performance reporting for quarter four and the financial year, our standards, education and disciplinary functions met 100% of their targets. And we did put a high level snapshot from our performance information report in the slides. Next slide, please. So on our inspections, we did miss our annual target by just 3 inspections. The target was 128 inspections and we managed to perform an actual of 125. But the delays are beyond our control related to the initial months of COVID-19. The target was a pre-COVID target, and instead of adjusting the target, National Treasury did advise us to rather explain any deviation. I think it's worthy to note that inspections are now effectively performing remote inspections using electronic mediums and the assistance of technology and virtual meeting platforms. And surprisingly, Chair, this was a new area for all of us, but surprisingly, there's a lot of efficiencies that were also identified during this process of doing electronic remote inspections. And it is aligned to how other regulators worldwide are performing inspections in the current COVID scenario. Next slide, please. Our investigations, performed 62 investigations of the planned 91. The target was not met, firstly due to challenges in accurately setting a numerical target amidst many variables that's intrinsic to a investigation. And secondly, there was a reprioritization of available resources to cases to a mix of high profile and other cases, and also due to insufficient resources being available for investigations. Our refocused strategy recognizes these challenges, and our annual performance plan specifically addresses the further capacitation that is needed for the investigations department to enable more investigations to be conducted at the same time. Next slide, please. Chair, our operations department has achieved the vast majority of its targets, including a clean audit report for 10 consecutive years, including 2019-2020. We achieved 97% of our small, medium enterprises payments within 30 days, and 27% of procurement contracts was awarded to small, medium enterprises and small businesses. We've also achieved 17 out of the maximum 20 points of the management control score calculated according to our BEE scorecard, which is we've exceeded our target, if I recall correctly, which is 16. So we did exceed our target in the current 2021 financial year on this particular point. From an employment equity for workforce profile target, we came quite close. It has been notably challenging, though, to identify suitable candidates for certain positions, but we are quite close to the targets. Chair, I know you extended to us a much longer time, but that concludes the presentation.
I'm a bit puzzled where you got this 18 minutes from. We never ask anybody to speak for 18 minutes unless it's a public hearing and there's several speakers. But we some misunderstanding.
Your mic, Chair?
Yes. What about
it? Is it not disturbing the presenter?
No. He says he's finished this area. I'm a bit puzzled about why he thinks that he had 18 minutes, if I understood you correctly, my friend. Where do you get that from?
Yeah.
Where do you get 18 minutes from? An odd number like that.
So, Chair, it was in the invitation that we received from via Cindy. There was an indication in that invitation that our presentation should be kept to 18 minutes.
Have you ever asked yourself why it wasn't 17.6 or something?
Okay, we really don't know, but that's
either National Treasury is going wonky or our committee secretary went a bit wonky, and both of them are very good in their jobs. So if such a thing happened, it's a human error. You could attribute it to the typewriter, the keyboard, which acted on its own, which I think is the real culprit, or COVID-19 stresses. But, 18 is a very odd number. So were you told it's a three-hour sitting?
Yes, Chair, we did receive the invitation to indicate 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. But, Chair, what I can say is if there's any areas that you feel...
Yes, obviously, the proposal is ours if you've got that, or Treasury's, but, it's a human error, because Cindy's a very, very good parliamentary liaison officer, the best possibly I've dealt with, and Nkululeko is an excellent secretary, new as he is. So something went wonky there. But that's fine. There is a matter that I must raise as one of enormous frustration, which has nothing to do with you, sir, and your team. It's to do with this, that in terms of the program, in Koleko, I can't read the program that you sent me. Fully. But from what I can gather, the House was meant to rise at 13:30. And certainly we cannot meet as a committee unless the committee house chair for committees is approved. So we've done everything correctly, but I've got SMSs and WhatsApps from comrades and colleagues, several of whom, one of whom, well, let me report. Moletsane is on leave, or at least he tendered an apology. Fani has come back to say he's speaking right now in the House, and therefore he'll join us immediately thereafter. That's Fani Dutoy from the Freedom Front, Erba. And then I also got some from Willie Alcom from the DA to say he's also taking part in the debate. It's very unusual for Dennis Ryder, who's the leader of the DA in this committee, not to be present, and it seems that he too might be in the meeting of the plenary. Now, Inkululeko is interesting, and I have no reason to question him, that, you know, he did everything according to the rules. So I want to apologize to Erba. It's very unusual. It hasn't happened before like this, not in this term, certainly. In fact, I cannot remember since 2014 we had this situation where most of our members are not available because they're either in the plenary or, well, sometimes members are not available, let's be frank, but not because they're sitting in a plenary. So at least three members will join us later when they finished in their plenary input. It seems there was a change in the plenary program yesterday. So in Kuleleku, we can talk offline. I think we need to confirm this happens in future to avoid a situation where half the committee is not present. So I apologize to Erba, not on behalf of Inkululeko or myself as the committee chair, on behalf of the NCOP. But I will raise that with the powers that be. Inkululeko also says he didn't offer 18 minutes. Look, it doesn't matter, Inkululeko, whether it's you or indeed was a typographical or human error. But it is very odd that you didn't question Erba. Committee secretary or Cindy to ask why 18. All right, fine. We can answer the questions that come. So it is a bit slender, the input. I was looking for something more, but you explained why. Shall we then open up for questions? Is there any hand up? I don't see any. Dumasani, you're afraid to speak, obviously. Willie's joined us. Okay. Willie, you obviously...
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, go ahead, Dumasani. Willie, you're obviously free to ask any questions. Presumably, your party has questioned you this morning. Sorry? Oh, Dumasani?
Hello, Chair. I was saying that I don't have a question at this stage. I just on the platform.
Yeah. Anybody else from PBO, you're welcome to ask. Willie's got a question. He's just joined us. So that's great.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Can I raise something, please?
Sure.
I hope you realize that we're dealing with Irby and not the Municipal Demarcation Board or something.
Eunice. Eunice, thank you. I am still about to speak, but I've got about 10 minutes. My apologies, and I agree with you.
Where's Dennis, by the way?
He sent me an email to say that he cannot attend this due to responsibilities that he has got on a mayoral selection panel.
I don't want to understand. Okay, go ahead, Willie. Thanks for joining us.
Quick few questions. Unfortunately, I could not hear the whole presentation that was made.
Yeah, we understand, Willie.
I would just like to find out, has a permanent board been appointed? And secondly, has a new CEO been appointed to replace Janita John? She resigned in February and the vacancy should be filled urgently. I hope that is what can be answered because of the fact that I did not hear the presentation. Thank you so much, Eunice.
Yeah, look, my friend, if you are legitimately a victim of the NCOP's poor programming, then you could perfectly ask these questions. If you are campaigning vigorously against the ANC somewhere and you just roll in here and ask questions, then you will be stopped because because the rules allow it. Ah, Frank Jenkins. So let me raise a few things. Firstly, you know, it would be nice to hear other voices.
It's another head chat.
Yeah, okay, go for it. Who is it?
Ms. Mashangu.
Dikeleni, I can't call her Dikeleni. Chairperson Mashlangu, yes.
I'm not sharing. Okay?
This is a joke offline.
thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the Team Erba, PBO, Treasury, and all guests, everyone and members. I just want to ask to Irba if is there anything that they can do to ensure that this partnership that we are starting to see of bigger firms partnering with smaller firms, what is it that they can do, or are they having plans to make sure that the partnership is sustainable, or that they are contributing to meaningful changes for these firms as they opposed to window dressing? Because in most cases or previously we have seen that such intentions or implementation of government policies which are meant for transformation, they are done, but the intention is just window dressing. Actually, there's no impact at the end of the day. So I just want to know from Irba, is there anything that they are doing to make sure that there's an impact that is sustainable? The second one is in as far as the consequence management. In terms of this partnering with other institutions, IRBA needs to work alongside with SAICA so as to enforce discipline amongst the accountants. So the accounting community needs to assist the state in tackling issues around tax avoidance, illegal currency and others. So I'm more concerned in as far as consequence management, enforcing consequence management as a regulatory body. Those are the two questions that I have, Honorable Chairperson. And I think if they have those consequence management plans, they need to be harder for those accountants. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, Dikilati, those are very good points. In fact, it overlaps what I was going to ask anyway. So thank you for that. Firstly, Irba, can you give us some sort of report on outcomes where you will have auditors you're still investigating and the outcome hasn't been determined? We're not asking for anything to be aired publicly. It'll undermine the legitimacy and credibility of your investigation. But you can at least give us some progress. As you used to do in the previous term, you'll say, we're investigating these 16 cases, and then you'll highlight a few of them without telling us what the outcome is. So in that regard, can you just report back, particularly to new members? But I'm a bit like fuzzy at the moment, I've forgotten. I mean, I read this in the media and so on, but we haven't had a direct engagement with you for quite a while. So can you let us know the big controversial cases you were dealing with, VBS and so on, and auditors that had committed allegedly a lot of wrongdoing? Have those been finalized, and what has been the outcome? I see Willie's leaving for 20 minutes, he'll be away. So you can respond to Willie Alcom's question when he comes back in about 20 minutes. So the second thing to say is, in regard to your investigation, what has been the most serious penalty you have applied so far, or what, after an outcome has been determined? I'm not very clear. Are you at the moment, I suppose an unfair question to you, and I think I know what the answer is going to be, but that's what I should ask. So are there cases that you've dealt with swiftly since the regulations came, the amendments came into effect, and have you used the new penalties? I suppose that's unfair given the limited time. The cases that you have started before the amendments were promulgated to the IRBA Act, will you be obliged to apply the less severe penalties because the case has started before the amendments to the Act came into effect? Or can you, having started these cases before, still apply the more stringent and severe penalties? I think, you know, the Gillen is echoing the frustration across all political parties. We were shocked, actually, to put it mildly, at how limp the penalties were for the most horrendous misdemeanors and wrongdoing. And your former CEO was very, very aggressive, and rightly so, lobbying National Treasury, lobbying the chair of the committee at the time, you know, like expressing despair that we were not able to process those amendments. And that was mainly because of the NPO, because you rightly said that, no, we're not going to process these amendments. You and they can do it, but we ain't going to do it because, look, the terms about to come to an end, and the committee's been lumbered with so many bills at the last moment. So one understood it. And anyway, you got stronger changes, I think, in some respects because of the deferral. What are electronic remote inspections? How do you actually do it? The next point I wanted to ask is on the rotation of auditors, also picked up by my good friend, Tikaleri. I mean, like, is it really working? You were very keen on it. When we even pleaded with you, well, I did over the phone with your previous CEO and said, look, let's go ahead with it, but let's manage the process. And the reply was, well, they'll never agree to it and let them go to court if they have to. But what we're doing is correct. And we got legal advice on that. I can't recall how we managed that. But we certainly supported rotation. And now we want to see it happen even more, as Dick Lady said. Because the transformation of the auditing profession is crucial. Ever more crucial. I mean, look at what's going on right now. It's become a big issue, the economic and social transformation of the country, because the existing default inequality, you're going to call them that, have become worse. So I think between the NEA and our committee, we need to put on a lot of pressure to get things done. But in the first instance, we shall write to the minister in the next 48 hours in political, remind me, and get a letter off to ask what is going on. Then on the issue of, you gave us a brief overview of staff and skills issues and so on, but do you actually think you do have the necessary skills to secure more convictions of those who are obviously responsible for wrongdoing, but, you know, previous times you may not be able to fully present a successful case against them because of your lack of skills. So what skills are missing? These wrongdoings become more and more complex and sophisticated. And I mean, look at Steinhoff. I mean, it's still hanging in the air. One doesn't really know what's going on. Bolkian in Germany in that regard. I'm out of the loop. I don't know where the auditors have been tackled in Germany. And then you can maybe go to the report where things are here. Then on the issue of your budget, not that we're going to be able to do much, given that we are literally, well, not literally, figuratively speaking, we're in a very, very dire situation budget-wise. Question to you is, you know, you're not going to get more, but at least, and you're not going to use as an excuse that you don't have enough money, because everybody does that. It says, well, we couldn't do more if we had more money, without communicating to our committees in Parliament how effective and productive and prudent they are in using their limited resources effectively in the first instance. So that said, I also want to, you know, the way I understood it, right? I mean, if I got this right, that you could swoop on premises and so on. Now, with electronic remote inspections, isn't the surprise element missing? I mean, you know, There was a certain subpoena thing that was also challenged by various people on the eve of the May 2017 election. And we had to get legal opinion, and our legal opinion was, yes, it's allowed, it's actually done in the PIC amendment. So is an electronic remote inspection that you've been explained on how you do more than you have, isn't that nowhere near as effective as the element of surprise and so on that you're now allowed to engage in to prevent people destroying documents and so on, and also catching them unawares? Okay, over to you. Unless there's something else that people want to ask. I see no hand up here. So there we are. Okay, go ahead, my friends, and your team. Herba?
Thank you very much, Jay. So I'll start with, if it's okay, Honorable Member's Ocomp's question. Is that correct?
Yeah, he is here. If I'm right, he's here. Is that right? Willie, you here?
No, he has left the chair. I see him in the NSOP now.
Oh, except that he's got his thing on here, obviously. All right, so let's wait for Willie to come back. When Willie comes back in Kulaleko, can you kindly let us know? Then you can answer that question then. Okay, go to the next set of questions from Dikeledi.
Thank you, Chair. So the next question is around consequence management and partnering with SAICA. Our director, Nadine Kaper, can also come in here. But Chair, yes, we do play an indirect role, mostly through our stakeholders like ABASA. The question, as I understand it correctly, is that where there's a partnership between a big firm and a black small firm, that it's not just done for window dressing or for fronting. So, Chair, yes, we are aware of that possibility, and we are engaging with ABASA on a regular basis to support and add value through quarterly meetings with them. And we also provide our statistics to them. But there's currently no direct expectation from ABASA for us to do anything at the moment to protect the smaller partner, if I could use that name. But as an independent regulator, what we do focus on is the quality of the audit, regardless of the arrangement between a big and a small firm or a smaller black firm. We've therefore issued a guidance or a joint audit guide in August 2020 that would address some of the JA amendments, joint audit amendments and arrangements that we expect auditors to implement. What we don't want to see is the fronting happening where a big firm just puts the name of a firm there, but this firm is not capacitated, is not, you know, really part of the audit team. They're really just there to sign for window dressing. So that is something that we've been tracking for a number of years, and this guide that we issued in August 2020, we do believe that it will address the arrangement, the contractual arrangement between the two parties. And we do inspect joint audits, especially where we see something funny or where something, if we say there's a possible risk happening, where, for example, the ratio doesn't make sense, because both auditors need to review and cross-review each other's work. So that is what this joint audit guide is set out to achieve, Chair. And we also obviously need to remember the audit committee's role in appointing joint auditors for the right reasons. And we do engage with the audit committee forum regularly on matters that impact audit quality, and we share our inspection outcomes and inspection results with them, which includes things that we've picked up and reported during inspections of joint audits. So, Chair, to say that, you know, those smaller black firms are left hanging, I believe we have done some work to enable them to be part of the engagement team and to deliver quality. And we are, it talks to a bigger question around transformation, Chair, and that is what I alluded to earlier, that through our stakeholders, we have to address the transformation issues in the profession. I don't know, Nadine, is there anything that you would like to add to Honourable Member Dipalevi's question?
Yes, thank you, Imre. You've covered most of it. I think just to pick up on 2 points, and that the consequent management around partnering with other institutions. In the one instance, our mandate does extend towards managing very closely SAICA, because we've accredited SAICA formally through our mandate in the Act, and we monitor SAICA's processes through a monitoring process annually. That's quite an intense process, and we also follow a risk assessment methodology. So in terms of the way that SAICA manages their investigations and their disciplinary, we manage that closely. And then broadly, as Imre mentioned earlier, we are looking at comprehensive collaboration across various professional bodies and trying to look at the broader ecosystem and how we can influence that in terms of enhancing audit quality and just generally enhancing the accounting community to perform better in terms of their mandate. Thanks, Imre.
Thank you, Nadine. What I'd like to add, Chair, is on the consequence management with SAICA. SAICA is a professional body that we monitor as a regulator. And one of the important things that comes up with this question is, again, the question of comprehensive regulation of accounting bodies that we desperately need, and that was recommended by the World Bank back in 2013. We submitted proposals to the Minister of Finance in 2019, and the Minister did announce last year that an independent panel of experts will be established to look into the auditing profession, presumably to look into broadening the regulatory umbrella to also include accountants under that umbrella. So, Chair, I think it's a very valid question that, you know, that we need to implement consequence management. We need to be stricter with people that act, you know, unethically, etc., in this profession, beyond just auditors, but also those accountants that are the primary decision makers of financial reporting. So Chair, a very valid question. We have a host of initiatives and projects and interaction with stakeholders to address this issue of consequence management, but we will need probably some to see some broader regulation of accounting bodies as well as governance, those charged with governance, so that they could be held accountable. So, Chair, I'll stop there. I hope that answered the 2 aspects of Honourable Member Dikeledi's question.
Yeah, but the issues that I put to you, who's responding to that?
Okay, Chair, so some of the directors will respond to certain aspects. The next questions, Chair, around the outcomes of investigations, etc., I'm going to ask Gillian, our Director of Investigations, to answer your questions. Gillian?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. With respect to the current status...
Julian, can I just ask, please, then, for the purposes of Parliament's broadcasting, they prefer you to put your video on unless there's a connectivity problem. So if you can, do put your video on.
I just don't know how to do it.
Just press video.
Oh, there. Okay, I see it. Yes, I see it. Okay, there we are.
Well, we've seen you before on the screen, so...
Great. Okay, sorry,
That's fine.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. At present, we have 237 matters that are open and under investigation. This is 6.5% of our total population of individuals registered at the IRBA. Of those 237 matters, We have two categorizations. The one categorization is classified as it's either high profile or a public interest entity, and the other categorization is it's not a high profile or public interest entity. So of these 237 matters, 31% are falling into the high profile public interest entity category, and 69% are falling into the other matters. You then asked Chair about certain high profile investigations. I know you mentioned BBS, so maybe I'll just start on that. We completed those charge sheets a number of years ago. With the respondents on those charge sheets no longer being at the firm, they are requiring access to review their audit files, and we are still trying to accommodate them to set up access for them to have sight of the audit files, because in terms of PUDGA, we have to allow them to follow due process of seeing their own working papers again and responding to us. So unfortunately, there is a delay in terms of them coming back to us on the VBS charge sheets, which have been formulated quite a while ago. On a matter like Steinhoff, we've made good progress. We did have a 14-month delay. That was because while the international financials and consolidated picture was issued pretty quickly after the scandal broke, the South African financials were not issued, and we only had jurisdiction within South Africa. So we needed to wait for the South African financials to be made available, the audit of South African financials to be made available, and we have received those in February. With regards to the investigation on Tongaat and Hewlett, we're making good progress there as well. I'm not sure, we are busy with the investigation on EOH with regards to the audit opinion on that matter. I'm not sure if there are any other specific matters, Chair, that you would like feedback on. You can move to your next question, Chair. You asked about whether we've dealt with cases since the amendments came into effect. No, we haven't dealt with any cases under the new dispensation, because we have this backlog situation, which we have set out in our 5-year strategy and our annual performance plan, and we also have sent communications to all the complainants and respondents to advise that either we have scheduled their matter for X, Y, and Z date, or unfortunately at this stage we haven't yet scheduled their matter. We are, however, in the process of recruiting additional capacity to be able to attend to these matters more expeditiously. So no, we haven't implemented any under the new dispensation. With regards to the new dispensation, if you will allow me to refer to the Act there, Chair. While if we haven't yet issued the charges prior to the 26th of April, which there's a number of cases we haven't yet issued the charges, we will deal with it in accordance with the transitional provisions, which says we'll deal with it in terms of the amended Act. However, I do draw to your attention, the transitional provision that says that obviously the sanction is applicable at the time that the improper conduct took place. So it's going to be still a while before you start seeing higher levels of sanctions, because we can't apply retrospectively. Even if we are dealing with a high-profile case from the past, we're still limited to those sanctions which were in our previous Act, which said a maximum of 200,000 rand per charge if we go down the monetary fine route. There are, however, within our Act, various sanctions that are available, and depending on the transgression, the committee process does look at whether it warrants a monetary sanction or whether it warrants a much more severe sanction, such as removal from the register, which only the disciplinary committee can do following an actual hearing on the merits of the matter. I think, Chair, I've dealt very high level with your issues. I'm not sure if you have further questions.
Sorry, yes. Do you come in, anybody else? Let me just see. In the same, Jadu, you got any
questions? Yes, Chair.
Yeah.
Yes, I have my hand up.
Okay. Whoever can go first, doesn't matter.
Okay.
All right, Dikele, let's give Mr. Njadu some time to settle in. Is that okay?
Okay.
Right. Go ahead.
Okay.
Njadu, just wait a moment because you just joined us. So you can just settle in. In the meanwhile,
Okay. Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to talk to the issue of the audit outcome, where the body itself, IRBA, was audited. And if I'm not mistaken, 5 years in succession, you have been getting unqualified with no findings. And I want to constructively criticize this, or just to trigger you to say, are you too comfortable? Are you in your comfort zone with the unqualified audit outcome without findings? Or are you planning to, or are you creating a room for improvement for you to achieve or to receive a clean audit to get out of your comfort zone? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Njadu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon to all the members IFB. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, my question will be on two points. My first question will be on transformation. Chairperson, as we're starting to see that bigger firms are now beginning to partner with small and medium firms. My question, Chair, will be to how will this be sustained as that process, one see that process is beginning to unfold? And then the second point, Chairperson, will be on restoring the confidence strategy. And my question is then to say what exactly does this strategy entail, so that one just have more in terms of understanding as to exactly what the strategy is. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Comrade Njadu. Can I follow up also, unless there's somebody else who wants to ask anything? I don't see anybody else in Kovalik. Okay, then in that case, I just wanted to ask, obviously, look, let me put it like this, right? I don't want to be unfair to IRBA, but given your important role, listening to you, I know you've been going through stresses and lots of duress. I know that many of you may feel that, your work is not appreciated, and that you have to come to Parliament in a situation where you're not responsible for at least some of the challenges IRBA has as individuals. but as a collective, obviously, you are, whether you, just as much as I would be, for this committee, even if I did my part, but others didn't, I'm accountable for it. Fortunately, that issue hasn't arisen in this committee. But, you know, listening to the two of you now, I know, look, you know, we did exhaustively engage with you over the last 6-7 years in processing the bills, especially on the NCO, on the NA side, when we had lots of briefings and I had several exchanges offline with your then CEO. I got a fairly good grasp, I think, of how difficult it is for you to proceed with investigations, the cumbersome process and so on, partly responsible, but even with a speedier process now, you know, elsewhere in the world, let alone here, if you compare us to the developed world, you know, probably not doing that badly, but on the, because it's a global set of issues you've experienced of how to get auditors to pay for what they've done in terms of wrongdoing. But for all that, listening to you, I get the feeling that things are moving too painstakingly slowly, that IRBA is not where it should be. And I'm not directing, let me stress once again, if you haven't got this clear, any personal criticism of any of you here. I'm simply saying it doesn't come across like you're moving. That's how it comes across to me. The answers we get are a bit like sketchy and almost glib. And as I say, I don't lay blame on anybody appearing before us. I'm just saying that's how it's coming across to me. I mean, if you think of VBS now, I mean, from the point of view of a politician, it doesn't seem as if much has got done. On Steinhoff, yes, I hear you, and I understand that you're working with the Germans and so on, but even there, it doesn't seem like there's adequate progress. So, I don't mean to be difficult or harsh. It's not very encouraging, that's all I can say. On the matter of electronic remote inspections, I didn't get a clear answer about to what extent it inevitably means that you are somewhat disempowered because you don't go there physically and you have search and seizure powers now and so on. You haven't responded to that. Nor have you explained fully, in my view, how exactly you do this electronic remote inspection. Have you got the skills to do it? I mean, these people that you go after, they very well resourced, private sector people, high powered, some of these are international companies, auditing companies and so on. So I don't get a feel enough about the gap between your skills and capacity on the one side and what you're supposed to do in terms of the law. Can you help with those questions, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just address this last point. Chair, obviously I did mention inspections, which is our routine monitoring inspections of audits and firms. You mentioned the disempowerment of doing inspections. Do you mean investigations, Chair, or inspections in particular? Difference.
Yes, that's correct. Well, I think I mean both, because both aspects are interrelated, though the one will probably be easier to do electronically than the other. But are they not interrelated? What I'm really asking is, in order to use your expanded power. In order to deliver on your mandate, to what extent does the virtual operation of IRBA undermine its capacity to fulfill what it's meant to do? That's what I'm asking, essentially. You know, Parliament can function, let me assure you, much of what we do as far as processing legislation and oversight can be done virtually for a committee like ours, okay? But for human settlements or public works, where they have to go down there and investigate, you know, sites, it's harder for them to operate virtually. But I mean, international affairs, Parliament's finance committees, appropriations are different, but I've got finance committees deal with macroeconomic issues and so on. We don't really find, in my view, that COVID has undermined us substantially. It certainly undermined other committees, but not us. So different agencies of the state operating under COVID times suffer different degrees of disempowerment, and some not at all. Some have been enhanced, saving time and energy with flights and endless traveling on the road and going to hotels the night before and so on. You see what I'm trying to say? So obviously we've all been hampered, but some not so. Their work is coming up, depending on what their role is and where they are in the broader scheme of the state. Do you get what I'm trying to say, my friend?
Yes. Okay, I think I understand your question. So the IRBA is probably one of those organizations that that can actually do effective remote inspections and investigations. The reason being is our focus is document-based. An auditor must document all their work. We come after the fact to either inspect or investigate an audit by looking at a document or a documented audit evidence that should be in place and is required by the standards. So firms are providing us with electronic access to these working papers, and it is actually very effective to do it in that way. I'm not saying there are benefits for the team probably to sit together at a firm, and I'm talking only about inspections now, and you know, to share knowledge and so on when they're sitting together. But to answer the first part of your question, we're very comfortable that during COVID, because we're forced to, in many cases, continue to do these inspections remotely, we are doing and we have seen effective and high-quality inspections and reports coming out of that process. I see Gillian is also on, but just from an investigations perspective, it's also document-based, mostly based on evidence provided to us, and the investigations look at whatever is in front of them, whether it be an audit file, communications, etc. But Gillian, I'm sure you want to just clarify the comment of Honourable Chair Karim around the remote working scenario and in whether it's disempowering investigations. I did explain the inspection side of things now, but maybe you can just touch on the investigations side.
Thank you, Imre. Yes, Honourable Chair, investigations has adapted well to the work from home scenario because, as Imre explained, we are looking for the audit evidence on the auditor's files, be they hard copy or electronic, of what it was that they did and what evidence they obtained and whether that was sufficient and appropriate to support their audit opinion. So the additional powers that have been granted of search and seizure and subpoena are greatly appreciated, Chair, because we were having a lot of issues on cooperation. But from data promulgation to now, we haven't had to utilize these at this precise point in time. But, you know, there's no hampering us to be able to implement any of those powers that have been granted should the need arise. But right now, since the 26th of April to date, we haven't yet needed to utilize those powers.
Okay. You want to add anything further, CEO?
Yes. Sorry, Chair. So I just want to find out, should we come back to your earlier questions around mandatory firm rotation and staff and skills?
Yes.
For guidance?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. So, Chair, to move to your earlier...
issue, but in fairness to people, Cindy says she doesn't can't find an email where... She said 18 minutes. But look, I have referred it to the UN and the OAU and the non-aligned movement and so on to investigate this thing, right? And I've given them 10 years to come back to report on who 18 minutes.
I hope they don't forget my question.
Yeah, okay, sorry, yeah. So don't worry, my brother. It's fine. Somebody somewhere got it wrong. It doesn't really matter, right? Because you ain't speaking for 18 minutes and we're expecting from you what we wanted anyway. So, right, it's fine. Doesn't matter. Cindy's not guilty. The CEO of Elba's not guilty. Nkululeko's not guilty. And as the chair, ultimately, I am guilty for everything that goes wrong. And never credited for anything that goes right. So I'm guilty and I will apologize for the 18-minute story. But having that... Can we respond first to Dikaledi? Sorry, she just sent me a WhatsApp. Okay. And Willie's back, and you can answer his question. Thank you, as well. Questions? Okay, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. So if I get you correct, you want me to address Dikaledi's question around the audit, the clean audit?
Yeah, and then Willie's, and then mine last, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm handing to Natasha Nyker, who is our Director of Operations, to answer the lady's questions.
Thank you, Emery. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. We really are, when we look at our unqualified audit opinion, really cognizant that we have been found by the Auditor General to have really strong internal financial controls, as well as in respect of our compliance with laws and regulations and performance information. This has certainly not made us complacent at all, Honourable Dikaledi. In fact, we have engaged National Treasury's internal audit section as our own internal auditors. And we have outlined together with them an internal audit plan, which helps to provide us with a second layer of assurance relative to areas on which we need to be improving. And these areas cover supply chain, they cover our governance issues. So we are continuously working on improving the areas that we have relative to our audit opinion. That we have. So hopefully that helps to clarify that our position is we are certainly not complacent. We certainly want to maintain the record of having clean audit opinions for the last 10 years, but we are also working constructively and proactively on improving our various areas of operation. Emre, it's
okay.
Honourable Chair, if I could maybe also then respond to your questions relative to our budget as well as the resources. Honourable Chair, you had asked the question as to when we look at our skills base that we have at the IRBA, is that sufficient to enable us to carry out the investigations and are those skills also fit for purpose? So, Honourable Chair, our budget at the IRBA for the upcoming financial year is $165 million, and we spend approximately $111 million of that on our staff expenses. We have paid very careful attention to the investigations of Organigram, and our request for our budget year was that we expanded our core of investigators to 8 full-time investigators to assist us with carrying out the investigation. We are also have a budget for external specialist investigators. So you've referenced complex areas that do need to be, and complex matters that need to be investigated. And we have identified that we would need a separate budget item for those. We do have to acknowledge that the recruitment of investigators is a challenging area, and we have placed special effort by expanding our panel of recruitment service providers, by going out to enable us to fill those positions that we currently have. And we have been successful in filling those positions, and we are working on the vacancies that we currently have in the investigations department. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Shall we go back to you, CEO?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. So thank you to Natasha. Chair, I'll then move back to your question on mandatory firm rotation, just in terms of whether we found, has it been effective or working? Chair, obviously, the effective date of our rule is 2023. We wanted to give firms sufficient time to position themselves in terms of a possible change. And we also wanted to give the companies sufficient time to plan around the requirements of 10 years rotation. But Chair, have we seen any, to date, have we seen any progress? So I think you might be aware that since we announced the rule in 2017, about 40% of all JSE companies that changed auditors cited firm rotation, and among them are even a few international affiliated firm companies that rotated because of rules in other countries such as the UK and Europe. So Chair, I think what I should also mention is we as the RBA, we are a member of the International Forum of Independent Audit Regulators. It's a member a body of 54 countries. And we were just re-elected to another term on that board, as well as serving as the audit committee chair. So among these 54 bodies, the majority of these independent regulators have recognized the benefits to firm rotation. And basically, it's addressing the simple issue of familiarity, of independence, which is impacted negatively by the cozy relationships that naturally develop over time between a firm and a client. Some auditors audit some of these companies for over 100 years, and the perception is that, you know, there's behind the scenes some sort of familiarity that creeps in that could blind the auditor to see some of the things. I think one of the best indicators that we have available even today is if there's new auditors coming in, taking over an audit on the JSE, we often see restatements where the new auditors, the fresh pair of eyes, pick up things that the previous auditors missed. And then there's several referrals from the JSE to us to say, but how can the old auditor, the previous auditor, not have picked up the issues, and the new auditor comes in and picks it up? We've seen the same scenario where the AG have taken over some of the audits done by firms previously. So Chair, it is a bit early. We are waiting for the effective date of the rule, which is in 2023. But I just answered your question that for us, the horse has basically bolted in that most companies have accepted and most auditors have accepted that there is a need to every 10 years break that relationship with a client and move on to a new client.
I'll ask you a question related to this. Is there a court case pending from one of the big auditing firms challenging the rotation?
So, Chair, yes, there is a court case, but it's not by the big firms. It is a small group of registered auditors that have lodged papers against MAFR, and that case is still ongoing, Chair.
So where's that now? When's the next sitting? And so on.
Chair, can I ask Rebecca to maybe talk to that process,
yes,
our legal director, for more detail? Rebecca?
Yes. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm struggling to get my video on. It says you cannot start video because the host has stopped it. Can I speak without the video?
Yeah, fine. Although it doesn't make sense, the clerk will facilitate that. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the matter is currently, we've exchanged all required pleadings and we would, in the ordinary course, be ready to approach the court. Unfortunately, they have now instituted an interlocutory application, which is an application in between, to strike off our defense or our answering affidavit, and that is, we have answered to that and they filed their reply and we have sought a set down date from the court. It is anticipated that we might get a date for that interlocutory application in August. We do not think that the application for strike out of our defense will fly. So after that, we anticipate that we will then have to approach the court again for a proper hearing date for the actual matter, which might be either later this year or early next year.
Okay, thank you. Can we go on? See you.
Okay, thank you. Chair, I'm then, what is left on my list that I made is Honourable Member Njadu's question around transformation and as a first part of the question and then the strategy around the second part of the question. Chair, I'm not sure if Mr. Njadu did see the presentation around our implementation of our strategy, but maybe on the transformation.
Well, he was stuck in the NCOP sitting, so it's understandable. Okay.
So, Chair, should I address those questions again?
Yes, please do. Don't keep asking me those. I mean, just answer the questions, my friend.
Thank you.
This
Thank
is
you,
Parliament. And remember, you're not just addressing us. There may be others observing what's going on who have a vested interest in IRBA or might just be in the public interest interested in what you're doing. So give us full. We're not a very formal committee. We sort of don't, well, this committee anyway doesn't operate bureaucratically. We let the meeting flow. And, you know, the chairperson is not God or anything. And if you're unhappy with a question I'm putting to you, you can say, look, chairperson, I'm not happy with it. And we can engage. We like free flow. Please go right ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair. So I'm handing over to Nadine to address the transformation question of Mr. Njadu, and then we'll also touch on the second part of his question around the strategy.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member Njadu. I'd like to broaden the answer around transformation, and there's probably four or five points. I think transformation starts from the entry level in the pipeline, which we're addressing through cycle right from a university level to trainees and as well as into our audit development program. Your specific question does relate to the recent developments around the big firms partnering with smaller black audit firms, and the main purpose around that is for those firms to get exposure to the JSE type and key clients. So that process is just unfolding almost as we speak. It was announced almost 4 weeks ago. So there's two formal aspects in which the IRBA can manage the concerns that you've raised about that process being sustainable and also meaningful to ensure that it's not window dressing. So the one way that we can manage that is through the joint audit guidelines that we've issued. and those joint audits are inspected by the IRBA, and it's those guidelines are specifically drawn up to formalize those joint audits, so that, and it does cover fronting. But we've also noted that through the mandatory firm rotation, audit firm rotation, we can also watch that space in terms of seeing what the rotation involves and whether it can include or should include the introduction of black audit firms being exposed to a different set of clients. Then in terms of the relationships that we need with the broader community, we, as we've noted, we work very closely with the BASA. They're quite instrumental in forming these transformation alliances across the sector, and we support them where necessary. So for instance, in relation to the work that they're doing with KPMG on the black audit firms, we are able to provide them with statistics on the firms that exist in terms of who's registered with IRBA, and therefore can provide them with that support. Thank you to you, Chair. I hope I've answered Honourable Member Njadu's question around transformation.
Yeah, if you haven't, then the members, they don't hesitate to come back. So we just take it that unless somebody asks a follow-up, I don't know if Willie is right now, but I mean, you just take it that your question is adequate. If people aren't happy, they will raise it. Okay, go right ahead now. Whoever is
Thank
next.
You, Chair. So, Chair, there was a second part to Mr. Njadu's question around the strategy. I didn't fully get the question, and I really want to do justice to giving a response to Mr. Njadu. Can I please ask Mr. Njadu to just remind us exactly what that second part of the question around our strategy is about? Just for the clarity, please.
Okay, Comrade Njadu.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chair, as you said, that I have missed out a little bit on the part, so I thought that I would want to have some more clarity on the strategy.
Okay. All right, Derek, just add, CEO, Acting CEO, just add, sir.
Thank you, Chair. So assuming that it talks to our focused strategy of the RBA, I think we're very proud to say that we at least have a new refocused strategy with the help of our caretaker board that was tabled in Parliament through our annual performance plan. And this strategy, as I've mentioned before, has three key elements to it. Mr. Njadu, so the first element in this strategy is there's three focus areas. The one is to ensure sustainability and relevance of the RBA and the profession for us to be able to weather and bounce back if something goes wrong. Secondly, to enhance the audit quality through audit reforms. There's a whole host of reforms happening globally, and we should look into what reforms we need to implement in the country to strengthen the audit independence, audit ethics, and audit quality. And then thirdly, probably the most important one, focus area, is to drive broader reforms through comprehensive stakeholder engagement. This is where we as the RBA don't necessarily have the mandate in our act. And this talks to broader regulation of accounting and governance in the whole ecosystem to strengthen the quality of information. That would inevitably, if addressed, also strengthen the quality of audit. So with those three focus areas, we have established a strategic Restoring Confidence 2.0 project, which is budget and now strategy back, that looks at this financial reporting and governance ecosystem. And with the engaging with stakeholders, we will come up with proposals to the relevant decision makers to strengthen the regulatory framework. Secondly, the auditing profession itself, this is within our mandate. We need to find the gaps, and we need to implement the necessary reforms to plug those gaps. And then thirdly, us as the regulator itself, We need to also, through the use of technology and the use of business intelligence and data, we need to be able to, you know, draw and identify risks from big data so that we can focus our energy with our limited resources on where the risk is the biggest, and to be more proactive, to spot things before they happen. To date, I must admit that as a regulator, we have had a reactive approach in that we only inspect and we only investigate things after they happen. And we really, as a regulator, also need to look at our processes, platforms, and our capacity and capabilities to effectively regulate the auditing profession. So, Mr. Njalo, that's at a high level. Our strategy is also available on our website if you would like to have a look at that. I hope that answered your question. Chair, to come back to your question around things moving slowly, I do believe that we might need to touch maybe on African banks. In the last 6 months, we have concluded our African bank investigation and disciplinary hearing. Maybe I can ask Gillian just to give you an update on that, what the outcomes were, what the charges were, and what the fines, et cetera, were. Just to give you some perspective that, you know, things are moving, at least not at a standstill. Big cases do take time, but I believe African Bank is a testimony to that we are making progress on high-profile cases. Gillian, do you want to add something?
Thank you, Emre. In the period 2018 and 2019, there were 66 days on which the Disciplinary Committee sat to hear the evidence on the African Bank matter. And there were two respondents, and the one respondent faced all 10 charges, and the other respondent faced one charge. The primary respondent was found guilty of 5 of these charges, and the secondary respondent was not found guilty of the charge that he was co-joined with the primary respondent on. So while it, you know, sounds, you know, like you scored 50% because you've got a guilty conviction on 5 of those charges. I think it is important to understand that the issues that the respondent was found guilty on in respect of the African Bank matter are absolutely critically fundamental within the realm of auditing banks in South Africa, because all those aspects have to do with different angles regarding impairment provisions and what the correct application is of accounting and auditing standards with regards to sufficient and appropriate evidence and compliance with IFRS in regards to reaching the correct conclusion and not over-relying on management representations. So that's a fundamental aspect that we need to emphasize on the African Bank matter in respect of the 5 charges where the respondent was found guilty. On the other charges where the Disciplinary Committee did not rule that the respondent was guilty, the one charge they said it was, in their view, a splitting of charges, and therefore they couldn't double sanction because they thought it had already been covered by one of the others. And in 4 other cases, they felt that having listened to the evidence of both the IBA witnesses as well as the evidence of the respondent and his witnesses, on the balance of probabilities, they felt that the onus of proving the charge wasn't met, so they dismissed those charges. So, lessons for us to learn with regards to going forward. But, you know, I think what's critical and of huge relevance is laying that foundation the fact that auditors must comply with the international accounting and auditing standards, and they must ensure that they are sufficiently independent of management and that they are able to reach the correct conclusion. The outcome of that hearing, I can hand over to our legal director to advise you on what that was, if that's okay.
Thanks, Shilin. Mr. Jordan was found guilty, like Shilin said, of and because we had to apply or impose sanctions prior to these amendments, it meant that for each charge, the committee could only impose a sanction of not more than 200,000 rand. And in respect of, I think, two charges, they could only impose a sanction of 100,000 rand because it was prior to the then amendment to make it 200,000 rand. So in total, he was fined 800,000 rand. Chairperson, I still get the same message that I can't have the video on because the host has stopped it. I'm really sorry about that. I'm not sure what's happening.
No, it's fine. Go ahead, really. What matters is really what you say. I mean, we can try to accommodate as far as possible. I also have problems here because the university students have, you know, although they're online, they've all come back. So, and I live very close to the university in St. Lucie. And I'm having enormous problems, actually, in the last 4 to 6 weeks. So can we allow the lady to continue? But for those who can, please do put your video on. Because the broadcasting people, internal to Parliament and external to it, are requiring that. Okay, go ahead, my friend.
Thanks, Chairperson. So Mr. Jordan was fined 800,000 rands in total, and then with a cost order of 31 plus million rands, which was a contribution to the Airbus cost, which we had incurred in respect of both the investigation and the disciplinary process. But he was also suspended from practicing as an RA, basically from conducting audits or signing audit opinions for a period of 1 year, within which period he was also required to undertake certain training, which was necessary according to the committee and or the IFA to enhance his skills or to supplement deficiencies noted leading to the charges of improper conduct. And then in addition to that, he was required to maintain his CPD. He was required to maintain his CPD for that period. And then after a period of 1 year, which ends in January 2021, we will then be able to review if he has actually complied with any of the with all of the sanctions imposed, and then after that, admit him back into practice as an audit.
Okay, who's next?
Thank you, Chair. I think we've sort of, I believe, addressed all of the questions that I had on my list. If I missed something, I apologize. Chair, can I just maybe make one comment that I believe is very important, and that is to talk to the issue that we're grappling with at the moment in the country, the fact that the comprehensive regulation of the entire financial reporting and governance ecosystem is lacking. And I believe that if we address the at all levels, those that take decisions in the companies, those that oversee the internal auditors, the audit committees, if everybody plays their part in the with those lines of defense, the quality of the end product of the financial reporting should be at a high level, at the required level. And we believe that strengthening of that environment is critical for us to get things right. As the RVA, it's difficult to come at the end of the process and be held accountable for everything that happened in a whole process where we don't have jurisdiction. So I think it's very critical from a regulatory perspective to have to plug all the gaps in the entire system and for everyone to play their part and making sure that the quality of the work that they do is with integrity and at the highest level of quality. I believe that's the only way we will be able to address it. And we are committed to support any, we are committed to support the Minister and Treasury and any decision makers that will strengthen the entire ecosystem in terms of through regulation and also through empowering us or whoever is involved in holding members accountable, be it auditors, be it CAs, be it bookkeepers, accountants, audit committees. I think everybody needs to recognize their role that they need to play in this entire system. Thank you, Chair. We'll gladly, if there's any further questions and if we've missed something, we're happy to pick up where we left.
Yeah, firstly, I think we are aware of what you just said, that you can't be held responsible for factors beyond your control. And it has been raised before by others who appeared before our committee previously. Excuse me. Can we have any more follow-ups? Because we're ready to tie up now. there's no point dragging a meeting till 17:00 unless there's any point to it. So is there anybody who, I'm looking at the participants, has a hand up? No, I can't see anybody in Kululeko. Can you?
No hands on my side either, Chair.
All right. So once again, my apologies for the attendance of about half of us, I think, and half of us are not here, mainly because the House is sitting. Secondly, also, with the local government elections, we are going to have this problem every now and then until October. But we thank IRBA for the inputs you've made. We don't think it's easy for you. We feel that, we would like more to be done, but we recognize the constraints under which you operate. But I still think within the constraints you could and should and have to please do more. But for now, it's fine. And, you know, just to tie up the matter that has preoccupied a large part of this meeting, I'm now told that there might have been, somebody sent me a WhatsApp note that said they think the confusion might be about this wonderful 18 minutes. CEO, why are you so over serious? Our committee, look, we do our job, but we also think that, if you're over serious in your work and in your life, it sort of doesn't all go well for one social and political and public service well-being. So I just want to say that the person said, well, that person thinks that maybe there's some confusion. See, today is the 18th of May, so that's where the 18 minutes may have come from. But at least it's better than getting an email that says, can you please appear before the committee on the 45th of May? Because you've been given 45 minutes on the 18th of May, and those figures could get transposed. So having said that, it doesn't really matter whether you understood it to be 18 minutes or you didn't. But as a matter of more serious reflection, you must feel free. You are a public entity to go back to the committee secretary or ring me directly and say, 18 minutes is not enough, can you have more time? So please do not be so, let's put it this way, I can't find the right word, but for want of a better word, subservient, so to speak. It works both ways. Of course, you're accountable to Parliament, but you also have the right to lobby Parliament on amendments to bills or regulations or wanting more time. Nothing stops, my friend, an entity answerable to our committee approaching Nicolaevico or me directly with a problem and saying, look, we would like to appear before your committee of finance because we have a case we'd like to present. It is only fair, because often we, sit here and pretty criticized entities, not having to bear the responsibility of running them under the most onerous and difficult and challenging circumstances, financial and other. So all I'm saying to you, my friend, is feel free to reach out to Infoleleko or me, or Cindy. Cindy's a very active parliamentary liaison officer, and she's been in the system for a few thousand years now. So she's very experienced. You can also approach her and say, look, speak to this chairperson. If nothing stops you, you can get my number from Infoleleko. It's on the website of Parliament. So, you know, please, next time you get 18 minutes, when you're the only item on a three-hour agenda, please come back to us and say, no, you want the other way around, 8-1, and then we can negotiate. Okay, thank you all. I know this has been a strange meeting in that sense, but, you know, let me put it to you, Irva, that even if we're the full committee, we would have got more done, but not substantially more. The important thing is it brought you before us, alerting you that we had to support you, but also hold you to account. And Kuleko reminds me, colleagues, that, excuse me, you will recall this is an in-house matter, but you can stay. We're not going to be long. Colleagues, you will remember that following the issues last week, I said I would ring Mr. Jomo Nyambi about availability for committee meetings of translators. And in fact, I did that exactly within 5 minutes of our meeting ending, and we had a long conversation. And he repeated what has been said before, that we do not have enough translators for every committee meeting. And very few actually requested, if any. They do on specific occasions. So in Kuleleko, what they're saying, which I might or might not have told you, my friend, but if a committee requires translation, we need to inform them at least 24 hours beforehand what languages, and they will make somebody available. They can't have somebody permanent on standby, but let's say it's an Nguni language. They will have somebody who's familiar with isiZulu, for example. And then what will happen is that person will be on standby, but they feel that they have to have some pre-notice. And I think what I'm suggesting is that they need to know who wants translation. And so they alert that when that person's speaking in isiZulu, for example, that, you know, they're fully alert and they can translate. Instead of sitting through an entire meeting when it's one person that wants translation, or actually, it's all of us who don't speak the language that the one person wants to speak or understand it. Okay, so that matter is resolved, but I will report when we have fully meeting next week, especially because both the people, the ANC person concerned and the FF person concerned are not here. Okay, having said that, we can defer discussion on that matter till next week, but I need to alert you about that. And Kuleleko will remind me next week to repeat that when we have a fuller component of the committee. Okay, thank you all, Irva in particular. See you at the appropriations meeting tomorrow. Bye then.